This is WMUK. I'm Kara Lawrence. Delfio Marsalis is the trombonist of the Marsalis family. He's the son of pianist Ellis Marsalis and the younger brother of trumpeter Winton and saxophonist Branford. An award-winning producer and recording engineer, he recently put himself and his father in the spotlight with a duet album of ballads from the Golden Age called The Last Southern Gentleman, which will be available when Mr. Marsalis and his father play the Fontana series Friday night. I spoke to Delfio not long ago, after a few hours of missed connections. You know, we were supposed to talk earlier today, but instead I just listened to the record over and over, so that's probably a good thing.
Okay, I hope it was relaxing and calming.
It was more than that. It was like, what did I write down? Ridiculously romantic.
You've got me.
This is your first full project with your father, the great jazz pianist Ellis Marsalis, and I'm sure it's a long time in the making, but both of you must be very busy with your music making and all these different projects and fields.
Yes, and I was kind of waiting for the right time. Branford and Winton have both made recordings, and I wanted to make sure that I examined what they did so that my CD would be better than theirs in every way. So I just, you know, I did some homework, and I would say it's fairly evident that the one trait that I certainly picked up from my father would be the idea of, I guess we're both romantics, and we have a certain understanding about how to translate that through music, and that was the idea of the CD. Jazz has always been closely linked to romance, and somehow we're getting away from that, unfortunately. And I believe it was Miles Davis who said he went to a fusion concert, and he knew that it wouldn't last because there was nothing but dudes at the show. So, you know, the idea of romance and, you know, that female touch and having that understanding of something that will appeal to ladies, I think it's been, any of the great artists that you named through the history of the music have been in touch with that.
Seduction, you know. You.
yes, there you go. For sure. And, how things have gotten misguided. We're kind of paying the price of the disconnect, the generational disconnect from the fusion era and from the 70s. I would say that there, and it's basically that the younger and the older musicians were not, you know, playing together as much. And then, of course, Winton came out, and there was kind of the revival, the younger and the older musicians. So now we have to wait for that generation of musicians, I think, to be older and to reach the younger generation, if that makes sense.
It does. I've lived long enough to see things come and go and come in waves. And may I ask if I am finding you today down in New Orleans?
Yes.
Are you there a lot? Do you have to tour?
Well, it fluctuates. It's fluctuated over the years. And now with this particular, you know, project, my dad doesn't tour as much as he once did.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are busy times and not so busy times.
Now, up here in Kalamazoo, you know, we walk around being pretty proud of ourselves for our music scene. We have a symphony, and we have a chamber music series and great jazz concerts from time to time. But I got to tell you, I cannot remember the last time I heard some authentic New Orleans-style jazz here. So we're kind of deficient in, and maybe a little bit afraid, you know, because the music you play tends to suggest to us that there might be a little more to life than working 50 years and retiring.
Yeah. Well, you know, American culture forever has been about the African and the European and how we, you know, what do we borrow from Africa, what do we borrow from Europe, and how do we change it so that it is American. And the great things that we took from Africa have always been an integral part of the music, and it's still very important in New Orleans music, which is why all over the world people love New Orleans music, because it is about the joy and the celebration of life. And that is truly a European design. I mean, I love Beethoven and Mozart and, you know, Puccini. I've studied all these guys. But, you know, the joy and celebration of life is not the first thing that you think of when you think about their music. Whereas when you think of African music, and I think, again, the younger generation is going toward the European idea that came out of the punk rock era. So while it is, you know, the rap and hip-hop, for example, it's strong and it's masculine, it doesn't really have that same kind of joy and celebratory aspect. So, you know, these are elements that you find prevalent in New Orleans music. And I think it's a great thing for people in anywhere, especially Kalamazoo, to experience.
So I would encourage listeners to check out DelfioMarsalis.com and also see some of the live videos you shot of some of the tunes that are on the new album, The Last Southern Gentleman. Well, for one thing, you gathered in a beautiful old church and set up a quartet and recorded these tunes. It kind of made me think again about how this seductive, sensual music is being played in a sacred space. And that just seemed at odds with itself and yet perfectly right for what you do.
Well, that's the beauty and the joy of jazz. I mean, it works from everywhere. We were, you know, many American musicians through the years have been influenced by the church. And, you know, the great thing about those videos is I just decided one day, I called my dad and said, hey, let's go to the church and record on Saturday. And he was like, okay. And we just got together. And it's literally the older musicians, they understand the conversational aspect of the music. So when they're playing together, it's like people just having a natural conversation. And I really love the video because it really captures that mood. And that is what my dad, he has never verbalized it, but he's always wanted us to have, all the younger musicians to have that sense of just conversation, nice, relaxed, and easygoing.
So he's a Last Southern Gentleman, and he's also one of the Last Southern Gentleman scholars.
Yes, well, he comes from a long, steady tradition, and it's different because the older folks didn't really spend a lot of time talking about it. They just did it, and they provided example, and they expected you to follow that example. And I feel very fortunate that I have known in my lifetime a couple of people who were born in the 1800s, and they lived to be old enough that they really impacted me. And I find that, you know, although my dad's not from that period, obviously, but he maintained some of those same traditions that the older folks had coming out of the 1800s, you know, no electricity, no indoor plumbing. And it's a big difference in the way of thinking about things. Almost the opposite of what we have today, where everything is seemingly commercialized and very product-based.
You get different kinds of audiences when you go different places, right? I think we're kind of trained to be quiet listeners.
Good luck with that. I've never found it to be the case. People are very flexible. And one of the great things about what Wynton does with the Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra is that it's actually patterned a lot after a European symphonic orchestra. So the guys set up on the band a certain way, and they present the music very high level. And sometimes you'll see the audience is very respectful and kind of, you know, quiet. But it's just a different design, you know. And, you know, our show is not going to be like that. So I'd be surprised if the people just sat there. We'll see about that.
Okay. So who are you bringing on this tour with you?
Well, we'll have my dad, and of course Reginald Veal is on stand-up bass, and Ralph Peterson is going to be on the drums, and that'll be very exciting for us because Ralph Peterson is known as a very modern drummer. And the great thing again about jazz music is that the connection between what my dad's generation played and what Ralph Peterson's generation and my generation, it's, you know, three different generations, but the connection is going to be through the blues and through the American song.
And we get to see that communication, that fun bridging of different styles together when we watch you guys.
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's the first gig Ralph Peterson will be on with us, so that'll be very interesting.
Let me go back and ask you where Mr. Peterson comes from. Is he from New Orleans as well?
No, Ralph Peterson is, he may be from Jersey or Philly, but he's teaching now at Berklee College of Music, and he came up right around the time that Branford and Wynton hit the scene. He came a few years after them, so he's one of the premier modern drummers.
Okay, and the bassist, where is he from?
Now, Reginald Veal, he's from New Orleans, and he actually studied under my dad in high school. In fact, he switched from electric bass. He started off playing electric bass in the church, and he switched to acoustic bass after studying under my dad, and he went from playing with my dad to playing in my brother Wynton's band for a number of years. And he is now playing with the great Diane Reeves.
I'm guessing that if you're a kid who studies with Ellis Marsalis, you learn a lot of things by ear, but he probably insists on formal notation and things like that.
Yes. And, you know, the school that we went to, the school is still around, but the design is very different. We all learned jazz and classical and vocal music in the same room. So there was always a time when we all had to perform and we had to critique each other. So, you know, we learned a lot. That's why you find a lot of the New Orleans musicians, their scope of understanding about music is very vast, very broad because of that type of training. So for my dad, his thing is to always achieve as high a level of professionalism as possible because that will give you the more opportunities. So if a Broadway show comes to town, they need someone that can fill in and play, you can read the music. If there's a marching band, they got a parade happening, you know the songs, you can go out there and you can play. Totally different discipline that's required for those two examples. But we strive to be able to adapt to whatever the musical situation is.
Yeah, that occurred to me when I was looking at a new album. It's got like 11 songs on it. In your head, you must know thousands of tunes, and your father even more. Like, how did you narrow this down?
Yeah. Well, my dad knows thousands of tunes. I don't know that I'm up to the thousands, but, you know, I've written my own original music for a number of years, which I prefer performing. And that's always a challenge. My dad's generation, they grew up playing more standards and bebop kinds of things. So my generation, we sound better playing our original music. So it's a big challenge to play these standards. But, again, it's the idea of romance. And the trombone is the most expressive voice, I think, next to the human voice. It's the most expressive instrument because with the slide and with vibrato, we can imitate the human voice much more than any other instrument. So, you know, that's the idea, is to just sing and sing these songs. And I've always loved playing ballads, and that's what my dad would always, he's been after me for a number of years. You got to do a ballad record. You got to do a ballad record. And it started off to be all ballads, and then, things happened.
Yeah, things happen. I thought Speak Low was one of the wonderful up-tempo numbers, and If I Were a Bell. You seem to use not only different mutes, but are you using different kinds of trombones? I know there's alto, tenor, and bass.
No, it's just the one. In fact, because I was supposed to play ballads, I brought my symphony horn, which is the 42, Bach 42. It's a large bore horn. Typically, you don't find soloists play. Only the, like Christian Lindbergh, only the classical soloist typically will play this larger horn and with that kind of a sound. You know, that's why the tone is really, to me, it's unique because of the horn and because of my orchestra, my classical background. And as we were in the middle of the date, I was thinking, boy, if I should have brought that smaller horn, it would have it'd have made life easier.
I think it really comes out in the opening to But Beautiful.
Yes, and that's the song that I've always loved, the version that Billie Holiday sang on her recording of Lady in Satin. And it's just, many of these tunes, I'm not actually playing the music or the written notes. I know the words to the song. So when I'm playing, a lot of times, I recorded with Monty Alexander, and it was similar. We're doing Bob Marley songs. Really didn't know the songs that well. And over the course of listening to the song, I never had any sheet music. I just had to learn by ear. That's always going to be your best bet, if at all possible, for any young musician. It's important to know how to read music, but it's always, your ears give you much more information than your eyes can.
Yeah, you can get very, very well trained and still not quite convince people that you know the music if you don't hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big, and you know, again, it's a big difference we hear with our older and our younger musicians. One thing for sure, and I know this from having a big band, is the saxophones, like the older school saxophones, they played with a lot of air. They played from the gut. Nowadays, the saxophones play more from the chest. And it's just, that's such a big difference. There's such a big difference.
Is it because we got microphones?
It's partially microphones. It's partially John Coltrane. It's partially Michael Brecker. It's partially a number of things that have, it's almost a redefinition of masculinity. It's like in the old days, you know, the tenor saxophone was like a man's instrument. You know, tenor sax is coming. It's like, whoa. But now everybody wants to kind of play the saxophones like a flute almost, that register. And, you know, it's, you know, look, the, I guess it's going along with society. The idea of male toughness is different now than it was 80 years ago. You know, it's just, it's a different thing, so.
Well, actually, I think we're in the same territory, but if we're talking about microphones and recording technology, which I know you know a lot about, the ability of people these days to make the prettiest tones in the studio, to affect a raw recording and create a very pretty sounding thing, that also kind of dehumanizes or like demasculinizes, let's say, certain sounds, I think. And I think you're more at the forefront of keeping it real sounding.
Right. Well, I would agree with you, except the fact that operatic singing has not changed. So operatic singers still are responsible for tone quality. And so, it's partially that. I guess it's more because people are learning to play in their homes and in schools. Back in the old days, people learned to play at concerts. They played for people. And when you play for people, again, that's a big differentiator with New Orleans musicians. We're playing for people all the time. It's just a big difference. You know, we're really like, we understand the sale. We're like salesmen. You know, it's like a good salesman. They know how to make the pitch, as opposed to just sending you an email that says, hey, buy this product. You know, you just hit the delete button. So I think we understand more about communicating with people. And again, that's kind of that African design. The African design is people come to your village, you welcome them, you make them feel at home, you feed them, you know, you share. So that's an important thing to us.
And that's a great place to leave this interview and say, you know, you're coming to our home in Kalamazoo and sharing your incredible tradition and music with us, and we will do our best not to sit there and do nothing.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have a great time, and that's the great thing about New Orleans and New Orleans music. We like to bring the gumbo and the etouffee with us.
We need a little of that in our lives up here. It's been cold and awful here, so.
Well, we're going to bring the heat, that's for sure.
Thank you so much.
All right, it's no problem. Thank you. Look forward to seeing you in Kalamazoo.